Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
The words humanitarian aid sound pretty straightforward, even noble, but when it comes to Gaza, nothing is ever that simple. As supplies continue to flow in, fuel, food, medicine, so do the questions. Is aid saving life? Is it prolonging a conflict? Is it reaching civilians? Is it sustaining Hamas? And is it causing unnecessary deaths? Why does Israel, a nation under attack, find itself under pressure to facilitate the recovery of some of those calling for its destruction? Well, to help us unpack this moral and strategic dilemma, I'm joined by Dr. Gadi Taub. He's a historian, author, senior lecturer at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. A very, very good morning to you, Dr. Taub. Thank you for joining us. I hope that you're well.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to join you.
So on the surface, humanitarian aid seems like a moral imperative. But in the context of Gaza, it is very complicated. Is it a tool for political warfare? What is the is aid, humanitarian aid in Gaza, different to other conflicts?
Well, let's start by what Israel should have done. Mm-hmm. Israel should have put a siege to separate portions of the Gaza Strip, in every one of them, created a humanitarian corridor to a safe place where people can also get food, and then apply a strict siege, no water, no bread, nothing, because everyone inside that quarter is considered a belligerent. Mm-hmm. They can, of course, surrender. That's what Israel should have done until the Hamas would return our hostages and surrender. We should win this war. Instead, there are pressures, some of them internal in Israel, by the way, by a reluctant army who doesn't want to occupy the Gaza Strip, with all kinds of excuses, because a lot of the brass of the IDF are veterans of the Oslo process and are still hoping that this will end in some two-state solution. So the army is putting up obstacles and excuses, and our own jurists, as you know, probably we are ruled by a juristocracy. The Attorney General of the army does not allow to stop supply to areas that have not been evacuated, and then we can't apply military pressure there because we want to minimize civilian casualties. So what we are doing now is a strange compromise by which people are getting food outside the humanitarian shelter areas. And so long as we will do this, the conflict will be prolonged, suffering will be prolonged, and we will not win the war.
And the added dilemma to that is that the greater number of civilian casualties, the better it is for Hamas. Hamas win because they use dead Palestinians as currency.
Exactly. What they do is they use human beings as shields, and that is a war crime. We should be absolutely clear that every death of every child in Gaza is the responsibility of Hamas, and the blood is on their hands. It is unthinkable that Israel would stop its war machine and surrender before the Nazis, because the Nazis are putting their women and children in our way. Because if we do that, we will lose all future wars. We will let the terrorists win all future wars. And that can't be done. Hamas can stop the killing instantly if they surrender, put down their weapons, and return our hostages. So mind you also that compared to other areas of urban warfare, Israel has managed to reduce the ratio of combatants to civilian deaths far below the average. It is the lowest in the history of modern urban warfare. So in this situation, in the most dense place on earth, with an enemy willing to put its women and children in harm's way in order to win PR points with the anti-Semitic idiots like Piers Morgan and other fools, then in this situation, we are still managing to put the death toll of civilians far below what it was in, say, Mosul and Raqqa when the Western coalition razed these cities to the ground in their war with ISIS. So, you know, it's once again, whenever the Jews are concerned, the standards are, of course, double.
The fact that we hear and they are parroted, or they come from the Gaza ministry, which is Hamas, the fact that we're hearing almost every day of these deaths, how do we deal with that? Is it, number one, is it real? Number two, is Israel responsible for that? And, you know, how do we manage that, given that whether it's true or not, it is pushing Israel further and further into isolation?
Yeah, we should just stop apologizing, because we should expose the hypocrisy of those who are blaming us and who are basically demanded that or basically saying that good Jews are victims. We are not going to be victims, and they will have to learn to deal with it. And it's better that in this neighborhood people fear us than they think that we are angels. We shouldn't be angels. We should be thugs as thugs in this neighborhood, because the West has very little to say about real Nazi regimes. So apparently, if you're an Iranian and you're calling for genocide, they will do business with you. But if you are Jewish and Hamas has tried to wage genocide against you and killed, burned alive, mutilated children before their parents in one day in the greatest slaughter of Jews since the Holocaust, and we are asked to apologize. So what I say to our PR people is just double down. Just double down. Because if you start apologizing before a Tucker Carlson, you gain nothing. What you should say is attack those who blame you, not apologize before them. And that is true of the whole shallow, empty, hollow, progressive moralism. The way to deal with progressive moralists is to turn the table on them. And this is what we should do. We are fighting a just war. We are fighting the war that all the West needs to fight if it wants to even survive, because it's not doing so in its own countries. It is surrendering before jihadi Nazis everywhere. It surrendered before the monstrous Iran until two leaders who do not care to apologize before progressives, Netanyahu and Donald Trump, just took out this monster on its way to a nuclear bomb.
So what message should Israel be sending? Never mind now, I mean, I think you've made it clear what they should send internationally. What message, or how should Israel be framing this for Israelis?
Well, you know, we have a progressive press here too. Mm-hmm. And we are under a campaign to end the war, to which Israeli journalists are contributing in Israel and outside this. You probably heard of the New York Times investigative piece about how Netanyahu is prolonging the war to save his own coalition, which you need to have very low political literacy if you do not understand that we need to defeat Hamas, that this war cannot end with Hamas on its legs, because we will get another October 7 in 10 years. So if you don't understand that, or your audience doesn't understand that, then you're assuming that they have been stupefied to such an extent that they have lost their survival instinct. So you read these things, and you have to know, you know, I don't want to get into this in too many details, but this is an internal Israeli struggle too, because the military and the Shin Bet, the secret service, did not wake Netanyahu up on the morning of October 7.
Yeah, he said so last night, and I thought that was a fascinating comment.
And they have been deceiving him for years before that. All their estimates, this is Shabak, Shin Bet, the General Security Service, who have become completely peace processors instead of a secret service. And they have their estimations and their analysis for years said that Hamas is pacified and is heading for a hudna, a long-term, not peace, but some compromise. So they have completely misled our politicians, and now they are trying to pin it on Netanyahu by finding some esoteric document in which someone said that there is going to be a war. And mind you, when they said there is going to be a war, they did not refer to Hamas, and they were not warning about a war. They were trying to leverage the refuseniks that were fighting the reform, if you still follow me. There was a struggle here over the reform.
Sure,
and these people of the left were threatening to tear the army apart and refusing to serve in the army until the reform has stopped. As part of their campaign, they said that the fact that the army is disintegrating is very dangerous because our enemies will we'll use the opportunity. So the pyromaniacs have been shouting fire, fire while holding the match. And wherever there were some warnings about a coming war, they were not warnings. They were threats to stop the coalition from pushing its legal reform.
That is where we leave it. Very, very strong views from Dr. Gadi Taub. He's a historian, he's an author, and a political commentator.